Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, does God really raise up leaders to deliver countries? Yes, he does, my friend. Not that lying lunatic in office right now, but he does do it, and here to talk about it tonight, say hello again to Pastor Jim Barrier.
Hey, good evening, Bob. You know, what a treat I get to be on back-to-back weeks on the Bob Siegel Show.
It's always great having you.
Pretty pumped about this. Now, we're going to talk about the subject that you introduced, and I think Tuesday night you and I are going to join a crosstalk session, and so we'll have to deal with some of the current events on that show, I think. But just suffice to say, what's going on right now in Afghanistan, it just absolutely floors me, and I'm just shocked. I'm like so many people, I'm just appalled. I almost can't believe it's really happening. But, Jim?
I am every bit as appalled. I can't say that I'm shocked. I expected nothing less from Joe Biden. He's been an incompetent and a liar and an arrogant cuss for the last 40 years. He's delivering I expected him to.
I guess the thing that's shocking is that even liberals and mainstream media are turning on him. That's pretty crazy, though.
Because they think Kamala Harris is going to do a better job, they should think twice.
As I once heard, denial is not a river in Egypt. All right, so what we do crave is godly leadership, and I'm praying still that will happen, that there will be people in prominent places of influence that can help turn this country, because we really do need to turn back to the Judeo-Christian principles this country was founded on, and just the things that are moral and decent that were what I grew up with for most of my life. And so what I'd like to talk about, we've set up tonight, we're going to talk about examples of godly leadership. And so I've got kind of three sections here, and to set it up, I want to talk about this principle that took place in the scriptures. There were people in the Bible who were godly men and women, and they were allowed to be in a place of influence even in ungodly governments and societies. And so we're going to talk about a few of those, and if I miss something, let me know. But one of the first people I think about is Joseph, one of the 12 sons of Jacob, Israel. And you know the story, Joseph, his brothers were a little jealous. He was kind of daddy's
favorite. Well, he helped them along with that jealousy by telling them that he had a vision where they were all bowing down to him. I just can't imagine why that didn't go over too well from their younger little snot brother.
Yeah, no kidding. That doesn't warm people up to you. But nevertheless, Joseph found favor after his brothers. First, they pretended like they killed him. They made up the story and told their dad that he was killed by a wild beast. And the truth is, they threw him in this hole. And then they had a change of plan. They got him out of there and they sold him into slavery. And he went to Egypt.
And as if that wasn't bad enough, he got accused of adultery while he was there working for the governor.
Because he had this mantle of getting favor, and he went and he was working for Potiphar, who was an officer. But then Potiphar's wife tried to put a move on Joseph. And that's a really interesting story.
And he resisted her, and then so she got all upset and then falsely accused him.
All a woman has to do is cry,
and that's it.
That's right. Yeah.
That's it. The guy's guilty till proven innocent.
Hashtag Potiphar's wife.
Yeah. Hashtag fear the tears.
Here's the thing that always grabbed me about that. She accused him. Well, first she tried to seduce him, and he said, "How could I do this and sin against God?" He didn't say, "How could I sin against you?" He didn't say, "How could I sin against your husband?" His concern was he didn't want to sin against God. And I found that to be very deep and profound spiritually, that was his concern.
Now, I'm trying to remember, Jim, is he the one that stood before Potiphar and said, I'm telling you, I did not have sex with that woman, or was that somebody else? Am I confusing them?
No, that was someone else.
Okay.
That was another guy in another realm. But so Joseph was he had integrity. He was a man of integrity. Well, as you said, he gets thrown into jail then, and while he's there, he starts interpreting dreams. And he interprets.
Well, what else are you going to do if you're in jail?
Well, whatever works. And so he interprets a dream for a guy who gets out, and he says, "Remember me, don't forget me." Well, the guy did kind of.
Then the guy forgets all about him anyway. Yeah.
But then Pharaoh had a dream, and this guy says, "Hey, I remember. There was this guy when I was in prison, and he interpreted my dream. Maybe he can interpret yours." So. They bring Joseph before Pharaoh. He interprets the dreams, and he has such wisdom.
Hey, wait, we've got to just say this. When Pharaoh has a dream, he really has a dream. Seven fat cows swallowed up by seven thin cows that remained thin. This guy really knew how to dream.
Well, and he apparently wasn't much of a mystic, but Joseph translated he interpreted the dream perfectly, and Pharaoh said, "Since God has informed you of all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. I'm going to put you in charge of my house and all my people, and only I will be greater than you." That's amazing for a guy whose brothers turned on him, thrown in a pit, sold into slavery, falsely accused, put into prison, and now here he is, the second most powerful man in the land. That's a great story. Now, this is Joseph. He's a man of faith. He's a child of Israel. And he's serving in Pharaoh's court. Pharaoh was anything but a God-fearing man, though he did acknowledge, that Joseph served the God of all gods. And let's face it, folks, it seems like the laws that are being passed and the shenanigans being pulled in Washington were acting less than godly as a government. And it gives me hope that God could raise up somebody and put them in place. Now, I have met people, and there are people in D.C. We'll get to that in a little while, but there are people who are God-fearing and God-honoring. But these are some biggies in history. Okay, next guy on the list, Daniel.
Very similar story. He was brought up not as a slave per se, but his nation was enslaved, and yet he was a righteous man that walked with God. He did not deserve that, and then he was put into the king's service. He didn't go to prison first, but very similar, and he too was made second in command of the country.
Well,
in this case, it's Babylon.
And along the way, and he said, "By the way, I've got these three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they were put in administrative positions over the province of Babylon." And Daniel and his friends, they refused to defile themselves with some of the customs that were acceptable in Babylon. And they said, "No, that's unclean. We can't do that." And they were still allowed to be in positions of power until that big statue.
Nebuchadnezzar got it into his head that he was God and built a statue. That didn't turn out too well for him.
No, but it was another great story because they said, "Look, you could throw us in the fire. We think God will preserve us. But even if he doesn't, we're not going to bow down to your statue." You know what? We could use a few Christians like that today that won't bow down to the
idol. Yeah, and we don't seem to have that many Christians like that today. They seem to be in very short supply.
Well, they need to read the Old Testament. So there's another great one, Daniel the visionary. Now, this is one of my favorite. They did a film a few years ago about this person. Esther. What a story. An incredible story. I call Esther God's double agent. She got in there and made it into the house of the king, and the king liked her so much. She found favor, and apparently she was really good looking because he had the pick of all the women in the land, and he liked Esther. I think it may have been more than just her physical beauty. I think there was something about her that he found.
I think there was a warmth and integrity. And boy, God used her to avert a Holocaust ahead of its time. There could have been an actual Holocaust against Israel had it not been for Esther. With another guy whose name starts with an H, Haman. Haman, Hitler. There's something about people whose names start with H where they want to go out and murder Jews for some reason. Don't quite get that.
Okay, I'm going to have to do inventory now and think of all the people his name start with H?
Well, those are the only two I'm actually
King
thinking
Henry,
of, Hitler
King
and Haman.
Pretty
yeah,
good.
Well, I don't think Henry didn't have much interaction with the Jews, at least none that were significantly a part of history. But yeah, but Henry, yeah. That's a bloodthirsty tyrant. You could say that about him.
There's another one. And then Herod the king.
Oh, there you go.
Here.
Yeah.
You know, you could write a book and people would buy that.
People who hate Jews whose names start with H. Oh, my gosh. I think we've got a bestseller here, Jim.
You know, there have been sillier things that have sold. And so let's give a disclaimer here to our audience.
We put a little disclaimer, howdy doody not included in the book.
Yeah, and Hopalong Cassidy. Okay. So there have been some good dudes whose name started with H. But that is an interesting thing, Bob.
Yeah, somebody whose name starts with H is going to write me now after the show. My name is Howard, and I'm very offended, very offended.
Okay, I'm going to do something here just for a very select few listeners to KCBQ. I grew up in San Diego, and KCBQ used to be a pop station. And they did news.
Well, it still is when you're on, Jim.
Well,
with our stump,
right.
Jim Barriers.
There was a guy named Harry Burrell. You ever heard of him?
It sounds vaguely familiar, but I must say I have not. I don't really know who he is.
He's got to be in there in the Hall of Fame for KCBQ. Harry Burrell, and we had, hi there, it's Happy Hair.
Well, that sure sounds like a radio person. Hi there. Hey yeah. There. Hi there. Ho there. You're welcome as could be. Oh, that's Jiminy Cricket at the Mickey Mouse Club. So.
That's right. Someone just heard me say that, and they had flashback. And they thought, I just did a time warp. I'm listening to KCBQ, and I heard Happy Hair. All right. See, this is what happens with you and I, Bob. We just kind of get carried away. And
it's part of our charm, Jim.
It is. One last Bible person. This is a New Testament person. And there were lots of people in the New Testament that God used. And, I think about Cornelius, who was a centurion. And he had Peter went and met him. He was converted. There were people like that, people that Paul met. But one in particular that always intrigues me, and his name, all we know is his name is the Ethiopian eunuch.
Okay, let's talk about that Ethiopian eunuch when we come back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170, 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Always good to be joined by Jim Barrier.
Herb Alpert has a new album coming out.
Uh-oh, Herb starts with an H. I didn't even think of that.
Oh, no. He's 86 years old, and he just is releasing a new album. That gives me hope because I'm not that old yet, and so I'm happy for Herb Alpert of A&M Records. That's the A and A&M Records stands for was Alpert. But at 86 releasing a new album, that's pretty cool.
That is cool, and what a talent too.
Yeah, something else, and probably is not hurting for cash. So the
starts with an H too. All right, I'm gonna make a promise to my audience. I won't say anything else about H's for the rest of the show. I promise.
Yeah, I hope you're promising.
I humbly repent. Humbly.
Yeah, I know that starts with an H. I get it, Bob. All right. Yeah, back to the Bible. That sounds like a program.
Yes.
Ethiopian eunuch. This guy, what a name to be stuck with for his alter history.
No kidding. Being known for being a eunuch, and that's your claim to fame. Well, you know what? Isaiah is a very long book. He was reading the scroll of Isaiah when Philip, the evangelist, came up to him. Maybe if you're a eunuch, you're not quite as distracted. You have time to sit through all 60 chapters of Isaiah.
Yes. Wow.
What else are you going to do with your time?
What this guy did, he was a court official for Candace, the Ethiopian queen. He was in charge of all of her treasury. That's a pretty big job. And he's on his way in his chariot, and Philip, one of the disciples, comes across him on the road, and this Ethiopian eunuch is reading the scriptures, the Old Testament, and as you said, and Philip says, do you understand what you're reading? Great witnessing technique. And the man says, how can I unless someone explains it? And Philip tells him that this whole thing is talking about Jesus Christ, and the eunuch accepts Jesus Christ. He says, why can't I be baptized right now? He takes him down to the water, baptizes him, and then this is one of the most mysterious stories in the Bible. Philip is just beamed up. He's transported.
Oh, I know. He's translated to another part of the country. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Beam me up, Scotty. So cool. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah. I do remember always being intrigued with that story.
Yeah, that's never happened to me as far as I know.
You know, it's also intriguing that he was willing to baptize him right there instead of saying, well, you've got to go through membership classes at our church first before we'll baptize you.
I'm going to give you some questions. If you answer them all right, then maybe you're a candidate.
Yeah, exactly.
So this was great.
Exactly.
Well, and there are believers in Ethiopia today who trace their spiritual lineage all the way back to that man. They claim to be spiritual descendants of that conversion. That's pretty powerful. So there's some powerful people in the Old Testament and New.
Hey, and the Church of Ethiopia accepts the Book of Enoch in their canon. So they have the Enoch and they have the eunuch. Just had to say that.
Oh boy. As long as neither one of those starts with an
H,
we need
the drum again, Brendan, like we did last week. Whenever we make a bad joke, we got to whitewash it a little bit with the drum roll. At least we're acknowledging how bad it is that way.
He'll be like Ringo at the end of Helter Skelter on the Beatles' White Album singing, I got blisters on my fingers.
I don't remember that. I just remember the Abbey Road album where if you play it backwards, that's you hear them saying, I buried Paul.
You know what? Don't have time for all that, but
I know it was a lot of nonsense. I think the Beatles were just having some fun at their fans' expense.
Well,
it sure sold magazines.
It was a big deal, but anyway. Back to our program, ladies and gentlemen. All right, now I want to talk about, we're going to fast forward about 1,700 years, talk about some of the founding fathers of this country. Now, history is being rewritten as we speak.
Well, wait, weren't they all just a bunch of white males? Why should we even talk about any of them, Jim?
You know what? If you do your homework, and I know you have, but just the listeners out there, what you'll find out is that these men were not white supremacists at all, and they were God-fearing people. Now, a few years back, I love to go to Washington, D.C., and I was there visiting, and I went to the Jefferson Memorial, and there were plaques stationed around that little rotunda, and these are words that I read by Thomas Jefferson in his memorial. The first one you're going to know, it's very famous. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. They are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And you know where that's from?
Well, it's from our Declaration of Independence.
Declaration of Independence. And he's usually credited as being the main
author. Where they're acknowledging that our rights come from our creator and not from our government.
Yeah,
that's what
exactly.
I
like. Exactly. Here's a couple of other, just two more quotes from Jefferson. God, who gave us life, gave us liberty. Can the liberties of a nation be secure when we have removed a conviction that these liberties are a gift from God? Those are the words of Jefferson, folks. One more from good old TJ, I like to call it. Almighty God hath created the mind free. All attempts to influence it by temporal punishment or burdens are departure from the plan of the holy author of our religion. Thomas Jefferson said those words.
Okay, and now I've got one. This is the far future, several hundred years from now, the Joe Biden Memorial in Washington, D.C. Oh. And here's what it says on the plaque. Come on, man. Give me a break.
Come on, man. You know, he's in hiding right now. He doesn't want to talk to anybody. Kamala left the country. They got serious problems. Come on, man. I might just start posting that in big, bold letters every day on Facebook. Come on, man. I'm sorry. We keep getting distracted. But, you know, last week I kind of made light of some of the things, but it's not funny anymore. It's terrifying. So here's some more things about the Declaration of Independence. It is largely inspired, in fact, they say the most inspired work of the Declaration of Independence is the two treatises of government by John Locke, which was written before, and that influenced and inspired the Declaration of Independence. That book by John Locke refers to the Bible over 1,500 times.
Yeah, and of course the historical revision always tries to tell us that our forefathers were not really Christians. That's really a lot of baloney.
Here's a few more. The following signers of the Declaration of Independence, these are names you'll recognize. There's a whole bunch more, but these are ones that most people know. John Adams, John Hancock, Benjamin Rush, Samuel Adams, who makes a great beer, George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, all of these signers of the Declaration of Independence declared that America was guided by or founded on Christian principles. Those guys.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And even though Benjamin and Thomas Jefferson probably wouldn't pass an evangelical litmus test, they still had a strong belief in the providence of God and that God's help needed to be sought for this country to be successful.
Yeah, and I'd say at this point, anyone who will talk about Christian principles is way ahead of most of the class today. Over half of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were educated in Bible schools or seminaries. I mean, that's profound. At another trip to D.C., I love to go there and see all the monuments and museums and all of that stuff, but I went on a tour with David Barton. You're familiar with him.
Oh, yeah, I love David Barton.
And he did. I went to a special seminar that he gave, a week-long thing, and part of that, we were treated to a tour that he gave us, a personal guided tour of the Capitol Dome, and we went through that rotunda. And on the walls are these huge paintings depicting scenes of American history, even at its very young age. And all but one of those paintings involved some Christian activity. One is of a baptism, one is of a Bible study. These were, that was part of the history. The paintings on the walls of the rotunda at the Capitol Dome are about Christian experiences. And the fact is they used to have church there. They held church meetings there in the early days.
So, yeah, we've absolutely forgotten our heritage. We've cast God away, and then we wonder why God isn't here to protect us. Okay, Jim, hold with me. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel's novels may start out looking like typical stories, but in no time at all, they go directions you would never have dreamed about. Just listen to the premise of Bob Siegel's unusual story, Choice of the Lorelei. Martha Flannery, an aggressive missionary, sets out for the Frisian Islands to convert the newly discovered tribe called Reinu. Here she enters into a strong battle of wills with Dr. Connors, a cultural anthropologist who wants to protect the Reinu people from outside influence, especially evangelism. Connors' strange manners and obsession with the Reinu are only the first of several eerie mysteries, including previous visitors to the island who never returned home, and an elderly gentleman claiming to be 4,000 years old. Choice of the Lorelei, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Jim, Brendan says we got a call from a lady who's claimed we missed one of the H's. She says we missed Hitler. Now, that's one of the disadvantages, of course, with radio. I'm sure she was very sincere, but you could be drive-in, turn on the radio, you come in the middle of a conversation. Actually, we started with Hitler by comparing Hitler to Haman, so we did not miss the most obvious H of all, but thank you for listening. I get it, though. Who hears a whole radio show?
Yeah. I appreciate listeners calling in and paying attention and you just had to make the obvious.
Exactly.
Now, where were we? We're going to have to
somewhere at the founding of our country. We were somewhere in that era, the 1700s.
Yeah. Okay, let's fast forward a little more. Let's talk about current people in politics or an influence in the government or whatever. And you may have a few that you want to throw in there. The good ones are all from Texas, except for the governor of Florida. I like that guy.
Oh, I love DeSantis. Go DeSantis. Yeah. He's great.
I'm going to just give you a little bio here of three people in the state that I live, Texas. First is the governor, Greg Abbott. Now, I love this guy. And I've met all three of these people that I'm going to mention at various conferences. And
well, you've met everybody. Good grief. You really get around.
That's all I got to do. I just tell people I know Bob Siegel and doors
open. And that's how you meet them. That's why they invite, of course. It's all so clear to me now, Jim.
Okay. Greg Abbott, great man, wonderful governor, and he has gone toe-to-toe with D.C. and the president, and he stands his ground. In 2005, he delivered oral arguments before the Supreme Court of the United States defending the Ten Commandments monument that is at the state capitol in Austin, Texas. That's taken a stand in this day and age when most people couldn't even tell you what the Ten Commandments are, or at least list them.
They probably think it's one of David Letterman's top 10 lists.
Yeah, exactly. But he's a godly man. He's a God-fearing man, is you know the term we used to say. But he's moral, and on top of that, he takes a stand, a conservative stand, on most issues, whether they're religious or not. And we've talked about this. If a person has founded their life on the principles of God, then they're going to see things with fairness and justice, and they're going to have a sense of right and wrong. And so when they see things that are wrong or unjust, they're going to speak out about it. And if they see things that need to be defended, they're going to speak up for those things, such as the Ten Commandments at the state capitol. And so Governor Abbott is one of those people that has been very clear on those things. He's also been very clear about his concerns about the border here in Texas, and to the point of saying, okay, if you're not going to finish that wall, we'll build it ourselves. I loved it a few years back, when Mr. Obama was rattling sabers and was sending troops cross country, just kind of as a display of his power and authority, Abbott called out the Texas National Guard, and they stationed themselves at every stop, basically saying, just keep on moving, boys, go to the next state, because you don't have any business here. I loved that. He just stood up to the president.
I don't even remember cool. Obama doing that. What was the purpose of that?
Well, it was...
I don't know how I missed that. I followed Obama's career pretty closely. What was the saber rattling all about? What was his point?
His point was where we're at now. It was, don't challenge me. We're going to do what we're going to do. And they were also...
Regarding the border, you mean, mostly? Was it over the border?
Well, no, it had more to do with camps that were being built. Very similar to the ones that they put Japanese... United States citizens who were Japanese ancestry put in camps.
Who was he planning on putting in these camps?
Well, that's where it got nuts. There's a lot of speculation about all of that. But at any rate, all of that was going on during the Obama administration. But the governor he has stood his ground, and he's protected the rights of Texans and people of faith in Texas. Let's move on, because we're going to run out of time here. The lieutenant governor, I love this guy, Dan Patrick. Now, he says he wasn't always a Christian, but in 1994, he says, these are his own words, he's repented of his sins, committed his life to God, and was saved. He describes himself as an evangelical Christian. He says, I respect all faiths and religions, but I'm a Christian first, a conservative second, a Republican third, and I praise Jesus for this moment and this day. He was baptized in the Jordan River. Isn't that pretty cool? When he was visiting Israel. He's a member of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, the International Bible Society. I love this man, Dan Patrick. Last one I'm going to mention, Ken Paxton, the Texas State Attorney General. Now, these are three powerful positions in Texas, by the way. And Paxton has kind of been at war with what he calls anti-Christian discrimination in the Texas schools. In 2015, he opposed an atheist group's legal action seeking to halt the reading of religious prayers before school board meetings. In 2016, he intervened in a dispute in Killeen, Texas, in which a middle school principal told a nurse's aide she had to take down a poster in the school that contained a quote from a Christian scripture. He sided with the aide, and they won in court. This guy's, you know, he's an activist.
Good for him. You know, I always like to ask my atheist friends, and they don't all get involved politically, but the ones who do, I say, if it's really such nonsense, if there really is no God, what on earth does it hurt if somebody's praying. If they want to do something that you think is silly and stupid, how in the world does it hurt you? They really don't have a good answer for that.
No, there's not. And I've just said the same thing. You know, Madeleine Murrow Hare spent her life fighting against something she said didn't exist. And so I don't know. I think there's something in there, though. I remember you telling a story about you were doing an open-air meeting or something at a college campus, and a young man said, a student said, you know, well, I don't have a problem with Buddha or any of the other leaders, but I do with Jesus. And you asked him why, and he said, because none of the rest of them tell me I have to change how I'm living.
Yeah, it was actually the ancient philosophers when we were talking about manuscripts.
Yeah.
And he says, well, it's several hundred years before we get the first New Testament copy. I said, well, you got about 1,400 years if you want to go back to Socrates. He goes, yeah, but Socrates doesn't ask me to change my life.
I said, thank you
for being honest, because it really wasn't an academic concern. It was a moral concern.
No. And I think that's also the truth. There's not a lot of honest atheists. I think a lot of them, if they admit that there's a God or even open the door, it means, uh-oh, now I'm saying there might be somebody bigger and smarter than me. I'm going to be morally accountable to such an entity.
Yeah, I have met some sincere ones, to be fair to them, but you're right. The high majority of the ones that I've talked to are very disingenuous.
And especially ones that just kind of, people that aren't real serious students and they're not real learned, but they say, well, I'm an atheist. And the truth is, they probably are not an atheist. Then again, I remember reading a quote by Madeleine Murray O'Hare, and someone asked her to define an atheist, and she said, it's someone who lives as if there is no God. And I thought, well, gee, churches are full of atheists.
I know all kinds of professing Christians that live as if there is no God. That is absolutely true.
Yeah, and the only other person I was going to have on my list here was Ted Cruz. We all know him. We talk about him a lot, but he is a believer, and he has stood up in recent years for, you know, he's defended Trump and he's challenged the elections, but he is a believer, and so is his father. I did get to meet his father one time at a meeting that Cruz was supposed to speak at, but something came up, so he sent his dad instead. But there are some Christians, and that's the point of this segment here and the whole show. There are Christians in leadership. There are people of faith that are promoted, and I believe very much by the hand of God, to be in places of influence that can speak on behalf of the truth and defend the rights of people who have faith. And I'm so thankful for folks like that. Now, I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see more people who are people of faith in positions of power in our government who would speak up, who would stand the ground and mean it, live it, and represent the Savior. And I think that's a key part of what we talk about so often, the need in this country for revival, for spiritual renewal. God can use people like the men that I just mentioned, and they are there. They're out there.
It is the only hope for our country, that God would intervene
really,
and that God would honor the people seeking him out in prayer.
Yeah. And there are prayer meetings in Washington, D.C. There are people of faith in government, and they meet regularly and have prayer, and they pray for the country. And that encourages me, because I see so much negativity. We take pot shots at people that are just such easy targets. But the truth is, we have some serious problems, and they're problems that aren't just going to be fixed through legislation or protest or letters or anything else. They're going to be changed by a move of the Spirit of God in the hearts of men and women in this country. And that's my only hope, Bob. And I love to be on the show and talk about these things, but the purpose is always lurking back there in the back of my mind, that we need a spiritual renewal in this country. And I thank God for you and your program, because you speak the truth, and you're not afraid to take on topics or to speak your mind. As the little blurb says at the commercial breaks, Bob does have an opinion or two.
Once in a while, my arm's been twisted. I've been known to share an opinion. Well, Jim, it is always great having you, and I look to the day when we can come back and talk about how everything turned out well. The things we were concerned about and asking prayer for actually happened.
Sure.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? We'll see you next month, my good friend. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show, always making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.